Blog Talk Radio.
Oh yeah. Oh, 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 oh yeah. Oh, no. African American Empowerment, 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's your main man, Marvin Roan, and Root coming to you. Oh, we got another show for you. You better hang on, but I want you to call a friend. We're recapturing the African mind. We're doing it one person at a time. Come on with me, y'all. Call a friend, brother, sister, family member, and let's do it like Luther say. Better love. That's what we got here. Family and friend time. African American empowerment. We're getting started right now. There's no better love. There's no better love.
Oh yeah.
Welcome, welcome one, welcome all to Empowerment Saturday. It's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's Marvin Roan and the family. We're coming to you with appeals today. We're appealing to you to call a friend, text a friend, email a friend, whatever you got to do, right, to plug into the show today. We're going to do a review and a reflection on where we are in Dr. Bruce's book, Recapturing the African Mind. And I think that's so important that we get into this process of really looking at how we recapture our minds. And then we're going to take a look, a critical analysis at what happened in Buffalo on last week. So again, I think it's wide open for discussion. We want you to join us. Tell a friend. I think this is a critical conversation. But not only that, right, we need to continue to look at how we move in this country, right? Our strategies, our techniques, our tools. And this is where the NAAEA comes in at. We're building. We're growing. Our mission is to empower us, our communities, to develop programs and services that support, inspire, motivate, and empower each of us, you, me, us. That's what we got to do, right? Nobody else is going to do that, so we have to do that for ourselves. We're going to have to return to the collaboration, the commitment, the connectivity, the union, the unity, right, that must exist in order for us to thrive, right? We got to get out of survival mode and start to thrive, and we only can do that together, right? We have to connect, and we're going to utilize in this concept or this organization the concept of peace. And you're going to hear it every week until it is ingrained. Like Dr. Bruce said, we're going to keep saying it over and over again until you get it, because we have to practically apply these techniques to our lives. Here we are, politics. You got to have a political agenda. You do, wherever you are, whatever city, state, town you're in, you have to have a local, state, and national and international agenda, a political agenda. Right? We need institutions that define our own reality, and we need resources. So we need political action, and we also need resources to sustain our institutions so that we can teach, train, and develop our people. We need an economic platform, an economic development, and economic tools that will put us in place to have a resurgent economic prosperity for our people, not just money running through our hands, but teaching us, training us, and developing us on how this capitalistic system works, and then utilizing the tools to be successful at navigating the system, right? So we're talking about system dynamics, right? Because if you understand the system, you know how to navigate it, and that's what we need the most at every level. And so we have to educate, train, and develop. BA, this is the personal piece for you, right? What's your athletic, health, wellness, fitness, nutrition agenda? That looks at your mental health, your physical health, and your emotional health. You're going to have to do that. You're going to have to make sure that you ensure that those aspects of your life are taken care of. You just do. You're going to have to take care of your mental health, your emotional health, your physical health, your social and emotional health. You just do. Who's gonna do that for you? Nobody. You're going to have to do that. You're going to have to be able to monitor what goes in your mouth. But you're going to have to monitor what comes out of it as well. How's your mental health, right? And if you're having issues with mental health, get help. It's just as simple as that, right? And many of us that are born and raised in this country are traumatized. We have been, right? If you are black in this society, you are dealing with a measure of trauma. You just are, right? You're either going to have identity issues or you're going to have some social conflicts, but you're going to have some conflicts somewhere in the package, guaranteed. But we can fix that if we begin to work on it and look at ourselves. Don't be offended by it. Let's get the A working. Take care of your A, yourself, your mental, your attitude, your actions, and your ways, and begin to work on yourself, right? One person at a time, like you said. On the plane, when the mask come down, put your mask on and preserve yourself first. So working on ourselves in that regard. Next is the C, P-E-A-C. It's culture, relevant cultural programs, just like this one and many others, right, that really look at helping us to identify what our culture, right, not the manufactured culture that we've been given, but a culture that helps us to be grounded and well-founded in what it is that we do collectively, what we do individually, what we do socially, and how that culture brings about a roadmap for how we behave and how we conduct ourselves. We need it. We do. And lastly, it's the E. It's a comprehensive education, a comprehensive one that really gets us to understand who we are, what we're all about, and where we're going. We got a great future ahead of us. All we have to do is stay on the road and keep plugging away. Stan Mack in a moment.
Man, Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah, man, we got the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
Oh, yes, it's absolutely what we're doing, and we're going to continue to do the work as we build our network city by city, town by town, continue to build those institutions that refine, that educate, develop, and use these tools. We're going to utilize the tools to develop our people, African-American empowerment. Call a friend. All right, here we go. We're going over to our Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment with Brother George. You know how I'm going to do it. Oh, yeah. Come on, Brother George. I like it. Hey, mama.
What?
What? Rocket, Brother George. Welcome to the show, Brother George. How are you?
I'm doing fine, brother. I was a little under the weather at this week, but I'm doing a lot better now.
All right. I'm glad you're with us. I know you got something funky for us today. Bring it, brother.
Well, thank you, brother. Today's Kwanzaa principle is going to be Imani, which is faith, to believe with all our heart in our people, our parents, our teachers, our leaders, and the righteousness and victory of our struggle.
I like that.
Now, this is, these are some trying times because something that my father told me years ago, he told me that that he's seen harder times, but he hasn't ever seen such uncertain times. And it always, you know, because he was right. You know, it's like everybody's searching for answers about now. Now, I'm going to today because I think it's necessary. I'm going to read again from Nellie Fuller's book, The United Independent Compensatory Code System Concept, a compensatory counter-racist code. And I think I forgot last time I read out of this to really say the most important part of the title, a textbook workbook for thought, speech, and or action for victims of racist white supremacy. So that's what the book was written for, position, which are us. The question is, what is the difference between violence, counterviolence, and nonviolence? Violence is any willful and deliberate act that is designed and intended to do unjust harm. Counterviolence is any act that is intended to stop or counteract those who willfully and deliberately do unjust harm. Nonviolence is the complete absence of violence and the complete absence of counterviolence. Question. As a victim of racism, a non-white person, what is the correct way for you to regard violence, nonviolence, and or counterviolence? Be against violence, including the violence that helps support racism, white supremacy. Be in favor of nonviolence to the extent that an unjust aggressor is nonviolent. To the extent that an unjust aggressor is nonviolent. You believe in nonviolence when they do. Be in favor of counterviolence in the extent it is necessary in order to help racism, white supremacy, and produce justice, balance between people. Now, there's another question here. It says, is violence justified? And the answer is no, never. Is counterviolence ever justified? Yes, always. Violence produces unjust harm. Counterviolence hinders or stops unjust harm. What we've seen in Buffalo was violence. And so at some point you have to start thinking about, you know, what do you do? You know, what is counter violence? Counter violence is we need to start forming militias so that we can help our people to organize and know where to go, who you're going to be with, who's going to help you in the event that those who try to hurt you, you're defending yourself against. You fight with those who fight with you. But if you disorganize, you're not going to be able to do that very well. And so we need to start really putting those kind of things into effect. And I want to end on a quote by Frederick Douglass. Find out just what any people will quietly submit to, and you have found the exact measure of the injustice and wrong which will be imposed on them. Find out just what any people will quietly submit to, and you have the exact measure of the injustice and wrong which will be imposed on them. So, Brother Marvin, I thank you for the time. Thank you for the introduction. And if you don't have any questions, brother, back to you.
All right. Thank you, Brother George. I do have a question, of course. What is the countermeasure for our people?
The countermeasure?
Yes, sir.
The counter is that we need to form militias, neighborhood militias, with our friends so that we can know where we're going to be, how to help each other out, where, you know, we have to organize things so that we can, in the event that we have to fight with those who want to fight with us, then we'll be prepared for that. Because you could say you're going to fight with somebody that's going to fight with you, but if you disorganize, it doesn't matter. You already lost the battle. It's disorganization.
Thank you, brother. Now, I'll say this. I want to just dialogue this for a second, right? When you start talking about militias, I know some of our people will be afraid of that conversation, right? But I think we have to honestly look at our history to understand why it's important to create those organizations and organize ourselves for protection, right? And I think if you know our history, and a lot of our people need to understand why that's so important, because at any time, things can go down. And if we're not ready to protect our children, I understand God, y'all. I understand Jesus. But we need to make sure that we're able to protect our children and our family. Any comments on that, Brother George, before we move on?
No, sir. You said it right.
All right. That's it. All right. Thank you, Brother George. I appreciate you.
Yes,
again,
sir.
Before you go, what's the name of that book? Get the book, y'all. We're educating ourselves.
United Independent Compensatory Code System and Concept, a compensatory counter-racist code. All throughout this book, this brother has studied white supremacy all his life, all his adult life. And he's trying to tell you the things that you do to counter it. And so what I just read was what you do to counter violence. You use counter violence. Not,
right.
You're nonviolent as long as the other person is nonviolent. But you fight with those who fight with you.
I like that. So like a good old bully.
Now,
bully is not going to stop bullying you until you fight them back. Go ahead, brother.
I forgot again. A textbook workbook for thought, speech, and or action for victims of racism, white supremacy. That's the whole title of the book.
All right. You're welcome. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you. All right. Y'all, we got so much work to do. Now, here we go. We're not talking about going around killing people, innocent people. We're not talking about starting a fight. Right now, in this discussion, we're talking about protecting ourselves from assault of any kind because of your color or your race. And we got to do that. I'm sorry, right? I think the old turn-the-cheek method is honorable. But how many times do you have to continue? Now, I'm not advocating violence. Don't get me wrong. How many times do you have to continue to be brutalized before you said, I'm getting out of this relationship? If it was your mother or your sister, how many times would you want them to be, or your brother, right? Or anybody. How many times do they have to be abused before you say, you know what, you need to leave them? It's a relationship that's out of balance and out of order. It's always been that way. And we continue to be hopeful, but the document and the history and the reality remains the same. It is not changing because they continue, and I say they, not all of them, but y'all know who we talk about, continue to promote and advocate for supremacy over other peoples in the world, and that is what we have to understand. And if you don't take a position of defense from that mentality and that ideology and that mindset, we all are in danger. You better have some defenses. You got to prepare. I'm not saying prepare for war. I'm saying prepare for protection. That's all I want to say. It's critical. Ask anybody living in Buffalo right now, or anybody who lived through Tulsa, or any of those other places that you could go through if you look at our history in the early 1900s. Atlanta, Wilmington, you could just go on and on and on. Research Bloody Sunday or Bloody Summer. You'll see it. It's a pattern. It's a history. So I'm telling you, right, do your history. Educate yourself. Prepare yourself, right, for defense. Black Panthers were about defense, and we have to defend ourselves and our children. All right, we're going to get ready to go over to Dr. Bruce. We got a good show today. Call a friend. The line is packed and the deck is ready to go. All right, we got Dr. Bruce coming in. Here we go. You know I'm going to do it right, Dr. Bruce. Bring it, brother. Oh, yeah. Dr. B. Come on.
Bring it. What?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We're here. We ain't going nowhere, Dr. Bruce. We're right here. How are you, sir?
Right here with you, brother. Right here. Hotep. Hotep to you and to all the listeners who are tuned in today.
Hotep. Hotep. We got a great show. We're going to do a reflection and a review, but we're also going to talk about Buffalo and some strategies coming straight from the good doctor. Dr. Bruce, I'm turning it over to you. Oh, one thing. If you want to get the book, I got to start out with this, Dr. Bruce. If you want to get the book, 919-956-5972. Get the book, Recapturing the African Mind, so you can read right along with us, and then you can prepare yourself for the next discussion at the next lecture. Dr. Bruce, it's on you, brother. Welcome again.
All right, brother. Thank you again for the invitation, and want to acknowledge you and Brother George on the good comments that you all made before my coming on as I was listening. And you're absolutely right. There were organizations that were around during the 60s, during the glorious 60s, as I call them, our time period in history when black people were really, really, really moving forward, coming full swing culturally, beginning to wear our own attire, own hairstyles, changing our names. Setting up organizations for defense, several different ones other than the one that you mentioned, Brother Huey and Bobby Seale and Eldridge Cleaver and Kathleen Cleaver and Elaine Brown and Erica Huggins and some of the other ones, Little Bobby Hutton and, of course, Fred Hampton in Chicago. So there were chapters of people who saw the need and the importance of doing things, and we were coming forward, like I said, with the defense in and also with our wearing our culture, speaking our culture, movies coming out about black culture and black situations throughout the country. So we were coming forward. And then, of course, looks like not too long after that, we kind of went to sleep and started to became comfortable after we were given a few programs, a few incentives from the U.S. government. We kind of went to sleep a little bit, and now we're realizing that we have to go back to some of the things that we were doing in the past. And one point that I always like to make clear, and that is the point that what we have to understand is that these people like the Caucasian in Buffalo and like Dylan Ruth in Charleston, South Carolina, and others around the country have done the same things. The policeman in Minneapolis, Minnesota, with the George Floyd case, the policeman in Louisville, Kentucky, and with Sandra Bland in Texas, and I mean it goes with James Byrd down in Texas, you know, being pulled behind the automobile. All kinds of horrendous atrocities that have been perpetuated against black people. We have to understand that what we're dealing with is the mindset, and we talk about recapturing the African mind. That's what we're right on our topic. We're dealing with the mindset of a people who came from the hills and cave sides of Europe, and when they came from Europe, they began to reap havoc upon all other people on the face of the earth. And partially this was done and continued in the slave plantations of this country when the history was given of black people, and their history was given. The history of white people has always been a glorious history, a history of kings and queens and conquerors and bold men and bold, ferocious human beings that took control of the whole planet through their own wit and through their own abilities to just ravage
everybody that they came into contact with. You see, that's the history that they got themselves, a great and glorious history. But the history that these same Europeans got of us was the exact opposite. And not only was it the exact opposite, but at the same time that the minds of European people were being messed up, our minds were being messed up also. Meaning that when you are fed all your life and all your breathing days that you have created everything, you're the most powerful people on the planet, the best looking people on the planet, the most intelligent people on the planet, the most athletic, everything. And then the other people who you have enslaved are nothing. So then you're going to think that anything to do to them, as what happened in Buffalo, New York, that you're really doing what's right. You're getting rid of the scum of the earth. You're getting rid of the people who are the most hated people on earth. You're getting rid of the people who are cursed. And you heard the idea of them being cursed all the time. Every Sunday you heard the idea of them being cursed and questions being asked, like Dr. Rogers talked about a few weeks ago, is a Negro a beast, and slave Bibles and all these kinds of things. So with all this kind of negativity and ugly and humiliating kinds of things that white people think about black people, with all that in their minds, then they see nothing wrong with what happened in Buffalo, New York, because they're doing it to someone who doesn't deserve any better anyway. You're doing it to a fly. You're doing it to a gnat. You're doing it to a mosquito. You're doing it to something that's causing you pain and causing you problems in your life. So you're getting rid of those pains and problems that you have coming from black people. But really and truly, when you look at it from an intelligent point of view, this whole world has been saved on the backs of people of color. When we look at America and we look at the World War One and World War Two, the Vietnam War, they always send black soldiers to fight to help them when they need help. The same thing that happened in the Revolutionary War and the Civil War. Everything. We've always been useful tools for white people. That's all. And that's all they care about us. With all the good that we've done for them around the houses, with all the beds we've made, all the floors we've mopped and swept, all the white babies that have suckled on the breasts of black women, all of that, they still look upon us as being nothing and as being something that they should get rid of, and that there's no problem in their minds when they get rid of us because we're nothing anyway, you see. So that's the kind of mind you're dealing with. You're dealing with a mind that was always taught that everyone is inferior except for them and their people, and they are superior. So in so understanding this, we have to get our minds back. Now that we know what happened, we get our minds back and we can look at things differently. We can look at things differently. As an example, I was reading something earlier today about the white entertainer Tom Jones to talk about the mind and how the mind works. They were comparing the songs of Tom Jones to Bob Dylan, to white artists, two white singers, two white entertainers, and Tom Jones was saying that he thought nothing of Bob Dylan until he heard Bob Dylan's song "Blowing in the Wind." He said that song made him think when he heard "Blowing in the Wind." Now, all these years he had been living in Wales and living in England and all over the British Isles and singing and performing all over the world. He's saying that he hadn't even started to think until he heard Bob Dylan, who actually stole the song too. That's another story. Who didn't really write that song, but everybody gives him credit for it. But he, when he heard Bob Dylan saying, "How many roads must a man walk down before he's called a man? How many seas must a white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? How many times must those cannonballs fly before they're forever banned?" The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. He said he hadn't started to think about these kinds of things until he heard Bob Dylan. So my point is not just black people, but it is organized, systematic teaching and training for a capitalistic system, a racist system, to not only rob people of color of their minds, but also to rob the masses of people of their minds, including their own people, except for a few who are in positions of power and who control and manipulate society. And that's what happens. So they control what goes into the minds of black people and also control what goes into the minds of white people. So until we take control of our minds and what goes into our minds, but first of all, to recognize that we're out of our minds, and we are out of our minds. We as African people in the United States of America and African people throughout the world and white people around the world and throughout this whole society in which we live, we're out of our minds. But when we recognize that, and I'm going back to my example of the white boy Tom Jones, he recognized that he was out of his mind. He said, "I never thought those kinds of things until Bob Dylan started to sing about it." You see, and most of our people have grown up in an educational system in America and have been taught from the primary through the elementary, from kindergarten, secondary school, high school, college, and university, we've been taught lies and falsehoods and deception, and have degrees upon degrees, and have gone and matriculated at the best schools in this country. But we really are still locked. We don't know that our minds are locked, and we have to take those locks off of our mind. And I don't mean, I'm not talking about a dreadlock now. I'm talking about the lock, the one with the key and the one with the chain. We need to take that lock. We have to have a key to unlock our minds. And that's what I'm trying to do here on your program, African American Empowerment Program. Take the locks off the minds of our people, black people, first, and then our minds are unlocked and our minds are free, then we can begin to think on our own and make proper decisions, you see. But until such time, we can't do that. And as a matter of fact, since we're doing a review today of my book, I have about 8 chapters in my book, and we're starting next week on chapter 4. But just to give a just summary for the benefit of some people who are just tuning in and who have been missing some of the programs, today I'm just going to do a summary and go back to the clear and natural minds of black people before coming into contact with Europeans on the face of the earth in chapter 1. That's what I discussed in chapter 1 of Recapturing African Mind. I talked about the natural world, its study and application, to those who might have the book. The natural world is study and application. And I talked about the fact that African people in the United States, in the world, our minds were grown and developed on what was around us, what the Creator had put here. There was no racism, because from the very beginning there were no Europeans on the planet. The whole earth was completely and totally populated by black people from the very beginning. That's something that a lot of people do not understand. But the whole of the 196,940,000 square miles, that's the entire area of the earth. That's the area of the earth I just gave. All those miles, the land and the water, was populated by black people. And our minds grew and developed in a natural state. In a natural state. When I said natural state, we lived in harmony with nature. We lived in harmony with the breezes blowing in the morning, with the rising of the sun in the morning and the setting of the sun in the evening, the moonlight coming out at night, natural food, natural unpolluted waters, and all kinds of things, and our spirituality developed. We became very close to the Creator and very close to his creation, or through his creation, we became very close to the Creator. And that eventually, as we found out, was something that Europeans use against us by us being a very, very, very spiritual beings. And they used their religion and took control of us. And so in chapter one, I talk about the mental development of early Nilotic Africans, meaning Africans on the banks of the Nile. The mental development of early Nilotic Africans was highly spiritual and led to the growth of a very advanced society of people whose culture is still a marvel in the world today. As Albert Churchward, a writer here, a white writer, a European historian, he says in his book called The Signs and Symbols of Primordial Man, and I'm reading from page 28 of my book, he says, "We have shown how primitive man first began to think and observe the laws of nature, and how from observation of these his spiritual ideas and the divination of things began to dawn upon him, how his spiritual beliefs grew, and how the first ideas and conceptions took place, which from want of articulate sounds, he clearly represented by various signs and symbols, which his awakened sense of awe and wonder suggested, and how of which religion was born. All else have built up by time and evolution," as Albert Churchward says, talks about what he's saying here, in just a little explanation. He's saying that we, due to our environment, our spiritual beliefs grew, and ideas developed, and they grew in the natural world. And this is one thing that I have noticed, and one thing that I suggest that people are really trying to learn and understand do, and that is to be eclectic in your study. Be eclectic. And when I say eclectic, I'm going to just spell that word just so I'm sure most people may know it, but just to be sure we're not getting it whether you know it or not. But eclectic being spelled E-C-L-E-C-T-I-C, eclectic, E-C-L-E-C-T-I-C, meaning gathering from many sources. In order to really increase your knowledge, it's very important that you study and gather information from various sources. And in studying the natural creation, which is my first chapter in the book, the human mind should be pretty much like the cactus plant, which I've talked about on the program before. As I said a few weeks ago also, you'll hear me repeat things from time to time, but how many times have you heard that George Washington chopped down the cherry tree? How many times have you heard that over and over and got that foolishness in your mind? So let's repeat something positive and get it into your minds too, and we have to do it over and over. But the human mind should be very much like the cactus plant. The cactus is what they call a xerophyte, that's X-E-R-O-P-H-Y-T-E. I don't know if we remind you all today to have a pen or pencil or your iPad so that you can take notes, because I'm teaching here. You're in a class on the African-American Empowerment Program, Brother George and Brother Marvin. So the cactus is what we call a xerophyte. X-E-R-O-P-H-Y-T-E, fight from the word phylum or plant, and zero, X-E-R-O, which means dry. It's a plant found in dry areas. And the cactus plant is found in dry areas, and our minds in the world in which we live today is found in dry areas, like the cactus plant. And what do I mean in dry areas? I mean that dry, no moisture, no water, nothing to promote growth and development. So we're in a dry area, an area where growth is almost totally unknown for the human mind. So the cactus, like the minds of of our people, of black people. Our minds are in a dry, arid, which means dry. Years ago, we used to put on arid deodorant. You spray it just to keep you dry, arid. You must have never thought about arid, okay? You spray some arid to keep that must down, okay? But anyway, our minds are found in dry, arid places and cannot promote growth and development of thought. Our minds cannot, because we're in an area where it's not promoted. And the cactus, in the same way, is in a dry area. And in order for the cactus to survive and to produce, then the cactus has in its, as a part of the cactus plant, it has little tiny holes in the limbs of the cactus plant, and those tiny holes are there so that the cactus draws in water that comes from the natural environment. You might not see any water on the desert, but there's always water in the air because air is partially water, H2O or H2O in the air. So the cactus is able to draw in water through its limbs, through its body parts, and produce water. And then that cactus produces water, and it saves that water so that it can have water during the times when it's dry and no rain, because rain comes only every now and then. You see, so the natural creation is very beautiful when we study the natural creation and we compare human beings and their minds to the natural creations I talk about in chapter 1 of my book as I go through a review here. And I'm not going to do a whole lecture really on the natural creation, as Brother George knows. But we just mentioned it here in chapter 1. Even when you look at the natural creation and you look at certain other animals that are found in arid areas, like in the arid areas or dry areas where there's no moisture, no life on the desert, you find the jackrabbit. But you find the counterpart of the jackrabbit, or what we call the little bunny rabbit, in the cold climates, and the little bunny rabbit has thick fur. The fur protects it from the cold and from the weather, but the jackrabbit has almost no hair because it doesn't need that hair to survive, and the jackrabbit has those long legs that have been developed over time so that it can survive and able to find plants or find food every now and then. It can jump and go wherever it needs to go, and that developed over time, you see. So even the flounder, when we look at the flounder, the same thing. You look at a flounder that you have on your plate, and I'm talking about my first chapter here, the African mind and the natural creation. You're actually getting more because I'm not going into all this in the chapter, but you find that the flounder, when you look at the flounder, the fish called flounder, it's black on one side and white on the other side. The flounder has two eyes on the bottom side of the flounder, or the white side of the flounder. It has two eyes, but no eyes on the top side of the flounder. There's a reason for that. There's a reason for that development over time with the flounder. We just have it on our plate and we think it doesn't mean anything, but that's all we know. We got it filleted. But when you go back to the natural creation, you study it, and there are great lessons to be learned in that, the natural creation. And one thing that we talk about on page 31 in my book, I talk about the fact that the first law of the scientific method is what we call observation, an observation of the natural environment, and I'm reading from my book, formed the foundation of ancient science and invention. The formation of ancient science and invention was developed from study of the natural creation. This is how African people were able to develop art and technology and engineering and science and medicine and chemistry and everything else that we study today. And this was, of course, in ancient civilizations like Ethiopia, and actually in Kemet, it reached its highest point, our development from studying the natural creation. So that was our first chapter, the natural creation. As we move on with just a little bit of review here of what we've already discussed, the natural creation, the African mind, the natural creation. I even talk about in that chapter about the origin of Christmas and origin of the virgin birth and all those kinds of things, and how that was seen in the natural creation before it was seen on earth. As a matter of fact, the natural creation is the origin of many, many, many things in which we study and which we know about today. Get a copy of the book and you'll be able to read more on that. Also in chapter 1, I talk about George Washington Carver and how he was a student of the natural creation. George Washington Carver did not believe in going and sitting in a classroom and lecturing to his students or standing behind a podium teaching his class at Tuskegee in Alabama. George Washington Carver said, "I want y'all to meet me down behind the barn in the woods back there at about 5 o'clock in the morning when the sun is coming up, and that's going to be our classroom." He realized that the original classroom was the one that the Creator had put around us, the one that shows us the sun, the moon, and stars, Leo the lion, Sagittarius, and all the constellations that we studied. That was the natural creation in which minds grew, and that's why the original or the origins of the Western system of education is called the nursery school. That can be traced back to nursery or nurse and nurture, as I talk about in chapter 1 here in my book. And white people, Frederick Froebel, the German educator, founded the Western system called the kindergarten by studying the plants in his uncle's nursery, you see. So the natural creation is the origin of all the knowledge in the world today, as I talk about in chapter 1. Chapter 2, missionaries as tools in the mind control of Africans. Missionaries as tools in the mind control of Africans, on page 45 of my book. After millions of years of observation, study, and analysis of the natural creation, Africans developed great civilizations such as Kush and Kem. However, through subsequent conquests, the idealism and spirituality of these ancient African civilizations gave way to the materialism of the Greeks and later the Romans. The decline of African civilization continued with the introduction of Eurocentric Christianity as a tool of mind control. Eurocentric Christianity as a tool of mind control was used, not Christianity, because Christianity is a religion that was created and developed among the ancient Africans on the continent of Africa, but then it went into Europe, or Europeans got hold of it, and then they began to alter, they began to change, they began to take in and leave out certain kinds of things, and then gave it back to us, and they were in power, are in power, so they're able to say that this is Christianity. But Christianity was our religion, as was all of the religions that we study in the world today. Then I talk about Constantine at the Council of Nicaea, which you can read and study about. And then I talk about a book called Bible Myths and their parallels in other religions, and how Christians, European Christians, began to feed us lies and falsehoods through religion. And I quote a book called Bible Myths by T.W. Doane on page 47 in my book. Besides forging, lying, and deceiving for the cause of Christ, the Christian fathers destroyed all evidence against themselves and their religion which they came across. Christian divines seem to have always been afraid of too much light. I want to repeat that. Christian divines seem to have always been afraid of too much light, as is the world today. The more light people get, or the more knowledge people get, the more dangerous they become to society. That's not in the book. That's me talking. Now back to the book. In the very infancy of printing, Cardinal Wolsey foresaw its effect on Christianity, and in a speech to the clergy, he publicly forewarned them that if we do not destroy this dangerous invention, meaning the printing press, it will one day destroy us, meaning that we have to keep knowledge away from these people in any possible way that we can. And that's the same thing that's going on today. Think, brothers and sisters, and this is one thing that I would always do in teaching my classes. I would start off my classes by saying, I want, and even in my lectures, wherever I am lecturing or speaking or teaching or workshops or seminars, I will always start off by saying I want all of you to do something that you have never done in your whole life. And then people look around and wonder what that is. And then I say, and that is to think. Most of us have never really thought in our whole lives. We think that we've been thinking. We're doing what we've been programmed to do, but we have not questioned it. We have not thought about it. We have not analyzed, as we talked about the origin of that word, analyzed, what it is that we've been teaching. We have not questioned it. Now, look at that word question very simply. Q-U-E-S-T-I-O-N. Quest I on. I am on a quest when I question. I'm on a quest for knowledge. There was a white boy on TV years ago. They used to call him Johnny Quest on some kind of cartoon. And Johnny Quest, what would he do? Traveling all around the universe, from what I recall, trying to find this, trying to find that, discovering this and discovering that. He was on a quest. So when you quest I on, you are on a quest. You're asking questions. So we need to quest our own, you see, and begin to think about the things that we have been taught and not to just accept any and everything that we have been taught. Why do we have to accept a certain day in the year to give honor to our mothers? Why do we have to let someone tell us when to do that? Why do we have to let someone tell us to put up a Christmas tree? Why do we have to let someone to tell us that it's time for you to go buy some Easter candy? Why do we have to let someone tell us what to do all the time? Why can't we think for ourselves and decide whether or not it's the best thing for us to do? Sometimes it puts us under hardships. It puts us up under turmoil. It makes us have to make a lot of sacrifices oftentimes that we're not prepared to make by going along with what everybody tells us to do. Begin to think for yourselves, brothers and sisters. And missionaries as tools, I talk about some of that in my chapter. And then I talk about how it is that we got this foolishness in our heads. I talk about the fact that the Pope, issued what was called the Papal Bull, which you can read about when you get a copy of my book. And I'm on page 51 of my book, paragraph that starts, when an accurate analysis of world mind control by Europeans is made, it becomes quite clear that perhaps its origin has to be traced to the issuance of the Papal Bull, or the seal of demarcation, which established a line between the colonial possessions of Spain and Portugal. Now, you can read that on your own once you get my book. I don't have time to go into all that right now, but I'm talking about when the Pope at the time, who was Pope Alexander, I think it was Pope Alexander, he issued what was called a bull, and a bull means a document or a seal, something that you should go by. And he divided the whole earth up between the East and the West and said that Spain could take control of certain territories and that Portugal could take control of certain territories, because these were the two early colonizers of the world. And like I said, I'm just going over some things, giving you a lot of leeway to do some further study. The Pope, he issued that bull, and then he sent Spanish and the Portuguese out around the world to conquer people of color. And he said, if you conquer them and if you do them right, you can make them love you. You can make them honor you, you see, if you handle it right. And that's actually what happened to us today. We honor and we love our slave masters because that's what we were taught to do. And the Pope said it in his book, The Bull of Demarcation. And I talk about page 52 and 53 of my book, if you can read about it, because of everything here. I'm just moving on here with just a little bit of review. And then I talk about various regions of the earth, such as Angola, and we talked about the Portuguese and what happened when the Portuguese went into Angola and Mozambique. And then I talked about Burkina Faso, and how European people set up schools and made Africans begin to speak the European language and to not ever speak their own language, and to actually ban the native language of the Africans in Burkina Faso, which is a country in West Africa. And I would suggest, brothers and sisters, to those who are studying with us and who are trying to learn and recapture your minds, to get you a good copy of the map. Actually, just go online and pull you up a good copy of the map of Africa and the world map, and this will become clearer. Then I talk about mind destruction in Liberia and Sierra Leone. And then in Chapter 3, I talked about the manufacturing of slaves in America. And I talk about the fact that slaves are made and how slaves are made, and these slaves that are made, I mentioned the fact that slaves are manufactured because no human being is born a slave. We were made slaves in this country. Slaves are made and not born, as I say on page 72 of my book. And then I talk about on page 73 the seasoning process that slaves go through in preparation for their work in the plantations of the Caribbean and in the plantations of the United States of America. We went through a seasoning process, a process of seasoning. And seasoning or preparation for a slave's work took place in the Caribbean islands before the arrival of Africans in America. One way of seasoning was to allow the Africans, upon their arrival in the islands, to spend time with the veteran slaves and become acquainted with the slaves' work routine. Now, I'm going to jump on up into this chapter a minute, because I want to mention how when we were talking about the story of Black Beauty and how Black Beauty is not about a horse, and how Black Beauty had to be taught by her mother how to act. And it's the same thing with the training of slaves in the Caribbean to become slaves, the training of enslaved people, I should say, to towards their work. One way of seasoning was to allow the Africans upon their arrival in the islands to spend time with the veteran slaves and become acquainted with the slaves' work routine. And I talk about how you can compare this to the same way that Europeans trained horses, because we recognize that they saw in nature that the way horses are trained and the way the mother horse trains her colt or the baby horse to be obedient to the master is the same way that we were trained to be obedient to our masters in the Caribbean before coming to America. And it goes on and on, you see, and we could get more into it as you begin to read and study in the book. And then we talk about some of the sermons that were taught during slavery about correction and what went on in the church. And I did just want to mention, as I said before on last week, that Black Beauty, the story of Black Beauty, was not a story of a horse, and the techniques for training enslaved Africans were adapted to resemble those used to train horses due to the lifespan and stages of development of the horse. You see, this is why they use the same technique to raise us as slaves in this country, you see. And so we talked about Black Beauty, and we talked about the various names that they call slaves on the plantation, or the language, the buck, the wench, the pickaninny, the nigger, and the negro. And I talked about these terms that Africans were referred to by on the plantation: buck, wench, pickaninny, nigger, or negro. And then I even talked about like the horse, slave children were also given names related to their growth and their ability. For example, a quarter hand was a child of 6 or older who does light yard work and taught to pull weeds in the fields. That's called a quarter hand, based on the same way they talked about horses. That's a quarter hand. A half hand was a child at least 8 years of age who works half a day and taught to perform gradually more physically taxing tasks. As he gets older, he becomes a half hand. First he's a quarter hand, then he becomes a half hand, and then you become a full hand. And a full hand is a child nearly 15 years of age who works alongside parents for the full work day. And this goes to show slave children, like baby horses, were divided according to age and trained accordingly. Until the slave child reached the age of about 6, he was allowed to perform only light chores, such as gathering firewood and caring for younger siblings. The children were often fed like pigs from a single trough where they ate with their hands. Listen now, this is the way we were trained. Generally, older slave women had the responsibility for slave children while their mothers were working in the fields. You see, so they, meaning Europeans, began to train our parents, mothers and fathers, so that they could train us to be good slaves on the plantations of America. And as I conclude, before we take a break and go to our lines, I have a picture in my book on page 106, a very interesting picture that I actually saw out in Wyoming. I happen to be reading the newspaper, and it's a picture of a herd of horses. To those who don't have the book, on page 106, and please get a copy of my book so that you can follow along with us. But on page 106, I have a copy of a herd of horses, and the herd of horses out front is another horse, which is a trained horse. And then in the picture, there's a helicopter flying above the herd and the trained horse that's leading the herd into a small corral where they are going to be adopted. So what's going on here? A trained horse leading a whole herd of about 15, 20 horses into a corral, and above this activity is a man driving a helicopter following that particular herd. What's going on here, as I say in my book on page 106, like the horse picture above, an African or African-American was often trained to lead the masses. They put the leader or trained horse out front, and then that trained horse will lead the masses, and in this case, it's leading the masses to their destruction. You see, they're not even thinking. They're just following a trained horse who is also trained by the European horse trainer who's flying in his helicopter and who's going to benefit from all this. And to those who are familiar with sheep and sheep herding and goats and that kind of thing, they have also something called a Judas goat, which is used in sheep training. But anyway, Brother Marvin, Brother George, we're right at the top of the hour. Just want to get right back to you.
Thank you, sir, for a thorough review. Now, if you can't get filled up on that, I don't know what can happen. But you need to get the book. If you don't, 919-956-5972. Call Dr. Bruce. Order the book. Get on pace with us. Right, we're learning. You got an online classroom right here, and you can get your book today, right, and get along. Brother George, you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
Right. As we head into the calls, right, give me a summary of what you feel like we've learned in this first half of discovering Dr. Bruce's book, Recapturing the African Mind, and the series that we're doing.
Well, he's took us through, you know, like a revision of what our journey has been from when we were freed people and, you know, completely free, and our thought processes and the way that we behave with each other, the way that we set up systems that eventually became governments, systems that eventually became the mathematical sciences that the world uses today, and other people tend to try to want to take credit for those things, you know, just like in Dr. Bridges' book. You know, they also, he's given a clear version of how we should be practicing our religions. He's given us a clear version of how we should be practicing our religions. He's not saying that our religions are not legitimate and different things like that. He's saying that it's the way that you practice it. Do not practice it the way that the slave Bible was set up. Practice it the way that you feel in your heart and in your mind, you know. And he's took us through some of the cruel things that they done, you know, to get us to the point that we're at today, like the same as using horse training as a method of training human beings and taking our females who were frightened and left out in the cold because the male was defeated, which is hard to, you know, a hard pill to swallow. But we were a defeated people. And when you're a defeated people, then people can do with you what they choose. And so they chose to get our females to train our young men to do whatever they wanted our young men to do and our young women to do whatever, taking advantage of our young women when they were 11 and 12 years old sexually. You know, same thing with little boys. You know, it was like a time period where he's making clear of where we came from and where we, you know, were in the past and where, and he's going to eventually bring us to where we're at right now. So that's what I've gotten, brother.
Thank you, Brother George, for that. Dr. Bruce, are you ready to go to the lines?
Go right ahead, brother.
All right. All right, we're going to kick it off again, 845-277-9250. I'm asking this, if you're on the line, pick up and say, hey, I don't have a comment. I'm calling from Detroit or Wisconsin, wherever you're calling from. Just give us a nod that you're there. You don't have to talk a whole lot if you don't feel like talking, but we're coming through the lines now. We want to hear from you. We're talking about recapturing African minds. Now it's about your thoughts on the events in Buffalo. Here we go. 0946. You are. Bring it.
Bring it. What?
0946. Welcome to the show.
Yes. Good afternoon. I just wanted to make a comment about the shooting in Buffalo. You know, part of what Dr. Bruce is saying today about our inability to think for ourselves. And basically, until we internally dismantle, let go, stop believing the ideology of white supremacy, then we're going to constantly deal with the tentacles of racism, never destroying the fear, the inferiority, the hate that cultivates, that survives, and which replicates itself effortlessly in this false narrative, this false sense of superiority. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that slavery, rape, and murder is wrong if you have a moral compass. And the community that we're dealing with have never had a moral code. It's always been
right.
A code of entitlement, destruction, domination by any means necessary. And what's happening right and wrong in a racist system, it's basically reduced to this thing that they now call relativism, that basically has dulled you know, our reasoning and devoid the consciousness of our hearts into this callous and abstraction. And one of the things that I want to say about the social justice movement, it doesn't really, in my opinion, have a moral compass. It's very loud about diversity, equity, inclusion, you know, the new buzzwords of the so-called woke. However, this awareness of social, political, and economic inequality doesn't translate in any moral rejuvenation, policies, practices that alleviate these toxic environments that we are exposed to constantly. And what I feel is happening is that there is a growing racial fatigue that is dropping with the social justice movement, that's actually dropping into this false narrative, this false sense of superiority, unintentionally reinforcing white supremacy. And so because it doesn't have a moral compass, it's just, you know, oh, everybody's got a right to do this and a right to do that, and who can, you know, we're going to stand up for everybody's people to have a right to go to this bathroom, that bathroom. And I'm not making light of any of that, but I'm saying that at the core of racism is a spiritual malady, a moral malady that needs a spiritual and moral remedy. And so part of what Dr. Bruce was saying about our origin of what we come from, there is an intuitive spirituality that we have in our beings, and all we have to do is just tap into it and stop feeling like that we got to go to everybody that's certified in whatever subject or guru, when we have all of this inside of us already and don't have to ask anybody's permission. So I just want to say that about the killing in Buffalo is that I was at a and I'll end real quick. I don't want to take up too much time. I was at a vigil for the Buffalo last night, and a white woman made a comment and said, you know, this was a kid, and he's, you know, mine's been poisoned. I said, you know, you see, that's what I'm talking about right there. I said the privilege of whiteness is that this man can gun down 10 people and still be seen as a kid. Black people have to audition for their humanity. I said Trayvon Martin was a kid that was gunned down. And then what they did was they devalued him, they discredited him, they denounced him, and then derailed the whole thing, and there was never a conviction, and he was gunned down. Yet this gunman, I have been hearing on the news, they're now starting to refer to him as a teenager. I said, my goodness, the system doesn't see a monster. The system sees his humanity. And so we have got to start seeing our own humanity, because nobody's going to give that to us. And that's all I'd like to say. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, brother and sisters. I mean, I didn't mean to say that that way, but listen, brothers and sisters, what I wanted to say is y'all got to play that one back, right? When you go back and this show is over, go back and listen to that comment again. Dr. Bruce, what you got? Thank you, sister.
Nothing other than I agree with the sister 100%. She did say something about recapturing the African mind when she said that the lady said that, when somebody used the term poison, she used the term poison. That's exactly right. The minds have been poisoned. They have been poisoned, and that's the situation we're in today. But all right, let's go on to another one, but well said.
All right. 0148, you on live with Dr. Bruce. Brother George and Brother Marvin. Got a question to come.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for taking my call. Real quick, this is Teddy from Montgomery. The question I have for you, Dr. Bruce, is, you know, in the triad of human existence, you have the soul, mind, and body. Where does that triangle, what would be the apex of that triangle? And what would be the two that would be considered the base, in your opinion? Is it the mind, then body and soul, or is it spirit or soul, mind and body? How would you arrange that triangle?
I think that the mind, definitely not body or soul. The mind, I mean, not body. We know not body at apex. The apex should probably be our spirituality as a people. That's one thing that has not been taken away and has not been destroyed, and the one thing that makes us entirely different from all other people on the face of the planet. Our African spirituality, if we can get back to that, then I think we'd be in pretty good shape.
All right. 5924. Thank you for the call, brother. 5924, you're live. Do you have a question or comment?
Hey, how's it going? This is your brother Kwazi. Thanks for taking my call. Dr. Bridges, thanks for letting me know about this show. This is my second week, and I look to continue to listen. I'm more than upset about the Buffalo killings that they did there. And I heard someone talk about, you know, how we need to strategize and deal with that type of situation. And I think that they've done that already, where they've reconditioned our minds in the sense of how we treat people when they're getting caught, especially white people. You talked about the Dylan Roof. You know, they didn't throw him up against the car after he killed and shot all these people in the church. They took him in, then took him to get something to eat. You can look at that from the Sandy Hook, the guy that killed all those kids there. Same thing. They took him in. They didn't rough him up. We can go on and on. The Nicholas Cruz in Florida that killed 17 people and then injured 17 others, and, you know, they took him in. And so we see that. And then we see them dehumanize black people, even when they're innocent, they don't do anything wrong, but they're beating on them, they're killing them. And even when we have these conversations, you know, they'll say something about, well, what are we going to do about the black-on-black crime? I said, it's not black-on-black crime. It's just violence. And the thing is, they desensitize us to our own problems, and now you want to blame the victim for the problems that they created. And then when you talk about us defending ourselves, well, when a white guy, if I was a black guy and I came in a white community dressed the way he was dressed, I would have got jacked up all kind of ways. And the police would have been there in minutes. But as a white guy, we have a upper level because we see redemption in them. They can be redeemed no matter what they do. And they do that by how they bring people in. You know, so they set us up for that. So we do the same thing. Even when we watch TV, you know, and if you watch an NCIS and you like to watch these shows, they're poisoning us with that influence. Like if somebody kills somebody, and then they tell that person, well, you don't want to get revenge because that's going to make you, you know, no better than that person. And then you got Michelle Obama saying, well, if they go low, we go high. Well, if you, you know, I get to strike you back. As a matter of fact, if I think you're coming at me, I'm going to get you first. Because if you strike me, I might not get a chance to do anything back. But, you know, they're making us feel that taking actions into our own hands is wrong. And this is how they control us. You know, they've done that with the religion where we just going to pray on it. You know, so I thank you a lot for all the comments that were made last week. And I know, Dr. Bridges, you talked a lot about, you know, the spirituality and how they use that to manipulate our minds and so forth. So, but I just wanted to get that in. So thank you.
All right. Thank you, sir. Thank you for the call. Dr. Bruce.
No comment. You got some other people on the line probably, don't you?
All right. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Great comment.
Okay, that's why I don't
want to keep listening. Keep calling in. 7841. 7841. You're next. You're live and you're on. Do you have a question or comment? 7841.
Hotep.
Hotep.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Welcome to the show.
So what the sister said, what the sister said, 100% mic drop. What the brother just said, certainly. I think the overarching concept to sort of summarize everything today is two quick quotes. One, the master's tools will never dismantle the master's house. Right? It ain't gonna happen. Okay? And we must understand what those tools are, right? And it may not necessarily, you know, be something conventional. It just may not be. And then the other concept is policing and taking care of our own, being present in our community so that we cannot be taken advantage of in any way, shape, or form. I'm talking about from the type of foods that are in our community, right, to the type of drugs that are in our community, the type of police that are in our community, right? Because like all the brothers said, everybody said, had a melanin child walked around in one of their communities, that would have been caught right away, right? And the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad would always say, never be the aggressor. Never be the aggressor. However, if someone comes at you, you defend your life with everything you got. Not only that, you make sure they never want to come for nobody else that looks like you.
I heard that.
And that's a fact. And that's a fact. There's a movement that you all know almost by lyric now, Black Lives Matter. But there's also an organization called Black Guns Matter. And it's not necessarily about encouraging any kind of violence, but like the brother George said at the beginning, it's about creating an emergency plan, a plan where if something were to go on, we know how and where to come together to protect ourselves. And in their communities, they call that a militia. So that's it.
Well stated.
Hotep.
Well stated. Thank you, Sister Hotep. All right. Dr. Bruce, any comments?
No, sir. We can go on to another one.
All right. 9282. Thank you, sister. 9282, you are up next.
Yes, sir, brothers. Hope everybody's fine.
Welcome to the show.
I greet you in the greeting words of peace and paradise. As-salamu alaykum, brother. Brother, the first thing I want to do is echo what the sister just said, because I had made myself a note. The first thing I wanted to say and brother referencing what Brother George said, every temple in this country that's under the teaching of Elijah Muhammad, the last thing they say before they walk out the room is never be the aggressor, like the sister just said, by word or action. But we have a God-given right to defend our lives with our lives, okay? Last thing we say. Second thing I want to say. White folks aren't afraid of us because we are lazy, because we pimps, hoes, bitches, niggas, lesbians, faggots, dirty, nasty, etc. Because they made us all those things, okay? They are afraid that one day we will wake up, okay? That we will wake up and come back into the knowledge of ourselves and kind, all right? And also, I don't believe white folks are out of their minds. I believe, again, what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught was that the white man is the devil. It is his nature, the way he has functioned and treated, like Brother Bruce said, Dr. Bruce said, came out the caves of Europe and went around the world and created havoc. That's his nature. And he conquered the world through lying, deceit, murdering and killing and tricking people, okay? Not because of some power thing. And then another point I want to make is, brothers, we as black people, we must stop disassociating ourselves from God. See, we say we can be anything we want to be, but we won't say we can be God. We don't believe in our current mindset that we are a part of God. God is something separate from us, out of us. We're searching for God. We're looking for God instead of looking for him in ourselves. Instead of realizing that we are in God and God is in us. We don't have to study nature if we know who we are. Like I said before, we created nature. That's what God does. That's what God did. We don't have to be analytical. We don't have to be observant and observe what we created. Once we get into the knowledge of ourselves and kind, we know what we not only did, but what we are capable of doing, brother. You know, and I want to say one more thing. We need to challenge each other. We need to be honest with ourselves, going back to being the one. We need to be honest with ourselves. And we need to ask ourselves, why would we teach our people, our children in particular, something that we can't prove, something that we can't say for sure it even exists, something that we don't know is true or not? Then why would we teach that to our children, to our people? Don't. We need to stop it. If we can't prove that it's true, we can't prove that it exists, that it's actually reality, then don't pass that down. And then we teach our children this mess. And y'all know what I'm talking about, all of it. Santa Claus, Easter Bunny, all of it. And then we tell them we don't know if it's true or not. In fact, most of the stuff we know not true. But we tell our children, just believe in us. Like I'm believing in somebody else. And then your children going to believe you because you're asking them, just have faith in me. Well, daddy, I'm going to have faith in you. Teacher, I'm going to have faith in you. Professor, I'm going to have faith in you because you're asking me to believe in you. You're educating me. You're teaching me. Then stop teaching them things you can't prove, things you don't know as real and things that actually exist. Stop it, because that's destroying the black mind. And then finally, brother, I'm going to leave with this. We must unite as a people or we will be united in our death or in destruction. We have to. It's plain and simple. If we don't unite as a people, we will be united in our death and our destruction. That's all where right. I am for today, brother.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Appreciate that.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you.
Appreciate you.
Thanks for the call. All right. 0316. 0316. Try to get one or two more in, Dr. Bruce. 0316, you're on live.
Oh, hi. This is Wahida from Maryland. And I'm just listening today. Peace and blessings to everyone. And I really appreciate all the comments that the callers have made. And, of course, the lecture. Thank you very much. That's all.
All right. Thank you, sister. Keep listening. 9266. 9266. You're up live and you're next. 9266. All right. 5932. 5932. You're live. You have a question or comment?
Yes, listening from Goldsboro, North Carolina, just enjoying the program and trying to learn. Thank you.
All right. Welcome, Goldsboro. Welcome. 8022. Keep listening, Goldsboro. We appreciate you. 8022. You are next. You're live and you're on. You have a question or comment? 8022.
Hello. Nan Tyree from Potomac, Maryland. I am just listening and enjoying the program. Continue the great work.
All right. Thank you, sister. Maryland's in the house. All right, 90. Thank you for calling. 679067. You are up live and you're next. You have a question or comment? 9067. Oh, all right. Last but not least. Oh.
And
Maxwell,
the comment.
You there?
Yes.
All right. Got about 1 minute.
Yes, I've enjoyed listening to Dr. Bruce. And the...
All right. Thank you. And
hello.
We appreciate you calling in. All right. Last one. 9872. I'm trying to get everybody in. 9872. 9872. You're on live. Thank you, Dr. Maxwell.
Hello. I have a comment for a question for Dr. Marvin and maybe a question for Dr. Bridges as well. Dr. Marvin, I wondered with your program being on so frequently, is there a library being compiled so that viewers who missed the show can be able to learn from it? And for Dr.
Yes.
Bridges, is there – I've heard him talk about how the non-whites made the world, in a sense, and especially concerning the suckling of white children by black nannies, et cetera. Is there a book compiled that indicates the contributions of black people or people, non-white people throughout the world? Thank you.
All right. Dr. Bruce, thank you for calling, sir. Dr. Bruce, 30 seconds on that and a wrap-up, and then we got to get out of here.
Yes. There's so many sources that I can give him, Brother Marvin. And since we got just 30 seconds, to those who are tuned in, too, I'll be back again next week. As a matter of fact, I'm going to write it down now. I'm going to have some sources that he can consult to try to get more information about that. And, of course, his question to you was, can he go to the archives? I'll take care of my part next week.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. I appreciate you so
and he
much.
He can go to the archives.
If you want
right.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. www.blogtalkradio.com/AA Empowerment. That's all you need. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/AA Empowerment, and you can get it there. So until next week, Brother George.
Brother, I'm good. I enjoyed the show. I enjoyed every second of it. I'm good.
All right. All right. Thank you, sir. You've got it all. I mean, we can't go any further. Now, it's up to you. Go back in the archives, blogtalkradio.com, AA Empowerment. You can get it that way, or you can look up my name, Marvin Rohn. Until next week, keep calling, keep coming, keep learning, keep growing, and becoming the best that you can be today and every day. It's African American Empowerment 365. Peace and blessings, brother.
To love, pure and chaste from afar. To try when your arms are too weary. To reach the unreachable star. Without question or pause, to be willing to march into hell for a heavenly cause. And I know if I'll only be true to this glorious quest, that my heart will lie peace and calm when I'm laid to my rest.
Peace and quietness you're sure to find,
and the world will be better for this. That one man scorned and covered with God still strove with his last ounce of courage to reach, oh, to reach the unreachable.
Gonna get there. Oh yeah. Get there together. Oh yeah.